Lamb to the Slaughter, read by Joanna David.
The room was warm and clean, the curtains drawn, the two table lamps alight, hers and the one by the empty chair opposite. On the sideboard behind her, two tall glasses, soda water, whiskey. Fresh ice cubes in the thermos bucket. Mary Maloney was waiting for her husband to come home from work. Now and again she would glance up at the clock, but without anxiety, merely to please herself with the thought that each minute gone by made it nearer the time when he would come. There was a slow, smiling air about her, and about everything she did. The drop of the head as she bent over her sewing was curiously tranquil. Her skin, for this was her sixth month with child, had acquired a wonderful translucent quality. The mouth was soft, and the eyes, with their new placid look, seemed larger, darker than before. When the clock said 5:10, she began to listen, and a few moments later, punctually as always, she heard the key turning in the lock. She laid aside her sewing, stood up and went forward to kiss him as he came in.
"Hello, darling," she said.
"Hello," he answered. She walked over and made the drinks, a strongish one for him, a weak one for herself, and soon she was back again in her chair, and he in the other opposite, holding the tall glass with both his hands, rocking it so the ice cubes tinkled against the side. For her, this was always a blissful time of day. She knew he didn't want to speak much until the first drink was finished, and she, on her side, was content to sit quietly enjoying his company after the long hours alone in the house. She loved to luxuriate in the presence of this man, and to feel, almost as a sunbather feels the sun, that warm male glow that came out of him to her when they were alone together.
"Tired, darling?"
"Yes," he said. "I'm tired." "I think it's a shame," she said, "that when a policeman gets to be as senior as you, they keep him walking about on his feet all day long." He didn't answer.
"Darling," she said, "would you like me to get you some cheese? I haven't made any supper because it's Thursday."
"No," he said.
"If you're too tired to eat out," she went on, "it's still not too late. There's plenty of meat and stuff in the freezer, and you can have it right here, and not even move out of the chair."
"I don't want it," he said. She moved uneasily in her chair, the large eyes watching his face.
"But you must have supper. I can easily do it here."
"Forget it," he said.
"But, darling, you must eat. I'll fix it anyway." She stood up.
"Sit down," he said. "Just for a minute, sit down." It wasn't until then that she began to get frightened. She lowered herself back slowly into the chair, watching him all the time with those large, bewildered eyes. "Listen," he said. "I got something to tell you."
"What is it, darling? What's the matter?"
She noticed there was a little muscle moving near the corner of his left eye. "This is going to be a bit of a shock to you, I'm afraid," he said. "But I've thought about it a good deal, and I've decided the only thing to do is to tell you right away." And he told her. It didn't take long, 4 or 5 minutes at most, and she sat very still through it all, watching him with a kind of dazed horror as he went further and further away from her with each word. "And I know it's kind of a bad time to be telling you, but there simply wasn't any other way." Her first instinct was not to believe any of it, to reject it all. It occurred to her that perhaps he hadn't even spoken, that she herself had imagined the whole thing. Maybe if she went about her business and acted as though she hadn't been listening, then later, when she sort of woke up again, she might find none of it had ever happened.
"I'll get the supper," she managed to whisper, and this time he didn't stop her.
When she walked across the room, she couldn't feel her feet touching the floor. She couldn't feel anything at all. Everything was automatic now. Down the stairs to the cellar, the deep freeze, the hand inside the cabinet taking hold of the first object it met. She lifted it out and looked at it. A leg of lamb. All right, then. They would have lamb for supper. She carried it upstairs, holding the thin bone end of it with both her hands. And as she went through the living room, she saw him standing over by the window with his back to her, and she stopped. "For God's sake," he said, hearing her but not turning round, "don't make any supper for me. I'm going out." At that point, Mary Maloney simply walked up behind him, and without any pause, she swung the big frozen leg of lamb high in the air and brought it down as hard as she could on the back of his head. She might just as well have hit him with a steel club. She stepped back a pace, waiting. And the funny thing was that he remained standing there for at least 4 or 5 seconds, gently swaying. Then he crashed to the carpet. The violence of the crash, the noise, the small table overturning, helped bring her out of the shock. She came out slowly, feeling cold and surprised, and she stood for a while blinking at the body. "All right," she told herself. "So I've killed him." It was extraordinary now how clear her mind became all of a sudden. She began thinking very fast. As the wife of a detective, she knew quite well what the penalty would be. She carried the meat into the kitchen, placed it in a pan, turned the oven on high, and shoved it inside. Then she washed her hands and ran upstairs to the bedroom. She sat down before the mirror, touched up her lips and face. She tried a smile. It came out rather peculiar. She tried again. "Hello, Sam," she said brightly, aloud. The voice sounded peculiar, too.
"I want some potatoes, please, Sam. Yes, and I think a can of peas."
That was better. She ran downstairs, took her coat, went out the back door, down the garden, into the street. It wasn't 6 o'clock yet, and the lights were still on in the grocery shop.
"Hello, Sam,"
she said brightly, smiling at the man behind the counter.
"Why, good evening, Mrs. Maloney. How are you?"
"I want some potatoes, please, Sam. Yes, and I think a can of peas."
The man turned and reached up behind him on the shelf for the peas.
"Patrick's decided he's tired and doesn't want to eat out tonight," she told him. "We usually go out Thursday, you know, and now he's caught me without any vegetables in the house."
"How about meat, Mrs. Maloney?"
"No, I've got meat, thanks. I got a nice leg of lamb from the freezer. I don't much like cooking it from frozen. You think it'll be all right?"
"Personally," the grocer said, "I don't believe it makes any difference."
When she had paid, she put on her brightest smile and said, "Thank you, Sam. Good night." And now, she told herself as she hurried back, all she was doing now, she was returning home to her husband, and he was waiting for his supper. And she must cook it as tasty as possible, because the poor man was tired. That's the way, she told herself. Do everything right and natural. Keep things absolutely natural, and there'll be no need for any acting at all. Therefore, when she entered the kitchen by the back door, she was humming a little tune to herself and smiling.
"Patrick,"
she called.
"How are you, darling?"
She put the parcel down on the table and went through into the living room. And when she saw him lying there on the floor, it really was rather a shock. All the old love and longing for him welled up inside her, and she ran over to him, knelt down beside him, and began to cry her heart out. It was easy. No acting was necessary. A few minutes later, she got up and went to the phone. She knew the number of the police station, and when the man at the other end answered, she cried to him,
"Quick, come quick! Patrick's dead!"
"Who's speaking?"
"Mrs. Maloney, Mrs. Patrick Maloney."
"You mean Patrick Maloney's dead?"
"I think so,"
she sobbed.
"He's lying on the floor, and I think he's dead."
"Be right over," the man said.
The car came very quickly, and when she opened the front door, two policemen walked in. She knew them both. She knew nearly all the men at that precinct, and she fell right into Jack Noonan's arms, weeping hysterically. He put her gently into a chair, then went over to join the other one, who was called O'Malley, kneeling by the body.
"Is he dead?"
she cried. "I'm afraid he is. What happened?" Briefly, she told her story about going out to the grocer and coming back to find him on the floor. While she was talking, Noonan discovered a small patch of congealed blood on the dead man's head. He showed it to O'Malley, who got up at once and hurried to the phone. Soon other men began to come into the house. First a doctor, then two detectives, one of whom she knew by name. There was a great deal of whispering, and the detectives kept asking her a lot of questions. She told her story again, this time right from the beginning, when Patrick had come in, and he was tired, so he hadn't wanted to go out for supper. She told how she'd put the meat in the oven. "It's in there now, cooking." And how she'd slipped out to the grocer for vegetables, and come back to find him lying on the floor.
"Which grocer?" one of the detectives asked.
She told him, and he turned and whispered something to the other detective, who immediately went outside into the street. In 15 minutes he was back, and there was more whispering. "Acted quite normal, very cheerful, wanted to give him a good supper. Impossible that she..." After a while the doctor departed, and two other men came in and took the corpse away on a stretcher. The two detectives remained, and so did the two policemen. They went about their business, searching the house. Her husband, Jack Noonan told her, had been killed by a blow on the back of the head, administered with a heavy blunt instrument, almost certainly a large piece of metal. They were looking for the weapon. The murderer may have taken it with him, but on the other hand, he may have thrown it away or hidden it somewhere on the premises.
"It's the old story," he said. "Get the weapon, and you've got the man."
The search went on. Sergeant Noonan wandered into the kitchen, came out quickly and said,
"Look, Mrs. Maloney, you know that oven of yours is still on and the meat's still inside?"
"Oh, dear me," she cried. "So it is."
"I better turn it off for you, hadn't I?"
"Will you do that, Jack? Thank you so much."
When the sergeant returned the second time, she looked at him with her large, dark, tearful eyes.
"Jack Noonan," she said.
"Yes."
"Will you do me a small favor, you and these others?"
"We can try, Mrs. Maloney."
"Well," she said, "you must be terribly hungry by now, and I know Patrick would never forgive me, God bless his soul, if I allowed you to remain in his house without offering you decent hospitality. Why don't you eat up the lamb that's in the oven? It'll be cooked just right by now."
"Wouldn't dream of it," Sergeant Noonan said.
"Please,"
she begged.
"Please eat it. Personally, I couldn't touch a thing. Certainly not what's been in the house when he was here. But it's all right for you. It'd be a favor to me if you'd eat it up. Then you can go on with your work again afterwards."
There was a good deal of hesitating among the four policemen, but they were clearly hungry, and in the end they were persuaded to go into the kitchen and help themselves. The woman stayed where she was, listening to them through the open door.
"Have some more, Charlie."
"No, better not finish it.
She wants us to finish it. She said so. Be doing her a favor."
"Okay, then, give me some more."
"That's the hell of a big club the guy must have used to hit poor Patrick," one of them was saying. "The doc says his skull was smashed all to pieces, just like from a sledgehammer. That's why it ought to be easy to find."
"Exactly what I say. Whoever done it, they're not going to be carrying a thing like that around with them longer than they need." One of them belched. "Personally, I think it's right here on the premises. Probably right under our very noses. What do you think, Jack?" And in the other room, Mary Maloney began to giggle.